Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 487. Woo! We are swiftly approaching 500 of the JV Club with my marvelous guest, comedian, writer, cartoonist, and all-around great gal, Mo Welch. I love this conversation. I strongly encourage you to check out her wonderful podcast, Come Out, Come Out, which she co-hosts with Joanna Catcher. She also has an upcoming podcast with the marvelous Beth Stelling, who, by the way, I somehow haven't had on the JV Club, which is a crime. So that's going to have to happen. It's called Getting the Light. And again, that's with Beth Stelling. It hasn't come out yet, but you also have the opportunity to check out her amazing illustrated self-help guide, How to Die Alone, The Foolproof Guide to Not Helping Yourself. Listen, this is a great interview. You guys are going to love it. Hope everybody's doing well. And I will talk to you next week. Well, I'm excited for you and getting everything set up. I too have like a space that's much larger that I need to set up, and it like is just one of those sort of daunting things where I keep thinking I gotta do it, but instead of doing it piece by piece, I've told myself for some reason it needs to happen all at once, which isn't true.
Right.
Like that's not accurate in any way.
I know. It's I feel like it was a very 2020, like the year 2020 project that I was doing in the year 2022, where I turned my garage into a podcast studio.
Yes.
Just so that we didn't have to like drive to a podcast studio to record it.
Yeah. No, that's a big incentive. Now when I need to drive somewhere to do something, it's a real 50-50. Like I'm kind of excited about it because it's still rarer for me to be away from home for work. And then the other part of me is like, oh no, driving somewhere. Like,
yeah.
It's become a real mixed bag, I think.
It is. It's so easy just to walk down to my garage, but yeah. I have to make myself, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. I mean, I could have coffee at my house, but I'm like, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to take a walk.
Yep.
And this is just like not a problem at all, but I'm pretending like it is.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Normal, Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. It's kind of in the middle of Illinois. And then I grew up like mostly in those country towns outside of Normal until I was 12. And then I moved up near Chicago.
Okay.
So usually I just say Chicago, but the truth is it's Central Illinois to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you dragged your country sensibilities into the Chicago area with you since you had hit almost a teen?
I was like I was ready to rebrand at 12 and pretend like I didn't have a past life. And so I came in there, you know, just pretending like I was this whole new person trying to get some new clothes for my grandma, trying to look cool. You know how it is when you're like, go to a new school and you're just like, it's going to be different this time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be popular.
Were you?
No.
Okay. Cool. Gotcha. Did you get new clothes from your grandma?
I did. My grandma gave me some clothes when we moved up there. Because when we moved up there, we didn't actually bring a lot of our stuff with us. Mm. And so she gave me some clothes from her closet. And I know that she's 10, 11 inches shorter than me. She's a small woman, and I'm not a small woman.
How tall are you?
So I'm 5'10".
Oh, you and me.
So, yeah.
Eye, baby.
I had a feeling.
Uh-huh.
So I had a growth spurt and was wearing my grandma's clothes. But she had name brand clothes, so it was more than I had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of name brands?
Limited two.
Yes. Got it. Do you mind if I ask why you didn't take some of your stuff, like you left some things behind?
Yeah, we were, I mean, like, it sounds worse than it, we were running away from my dad. We were in a bad situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is as bad as it sounds, but so much time has passed that it feels okay now.
Well, also, I mean, I can't, if it felt terrible at the time, if it felt like it was worse than it sounds or better than it sounds, then it's, I think there's definitely the like outsider perspective of hearing a story and actually kind of being the more objective one and being like, no, that's really bad. I mean, that's part of why there is so much DA, domestic abuse, you know, out there, is because when you're in it, you kind of do feel like, well, there's mitigating circumstances because I'm a human being and these people in my life are human beings. And if you just look at it on its face, it looks terrible. But let me explain. So like whether you had felt that or not back then would have been so normal.
And as a child, you know, I always, you know, I just say like the chaos was like the norm. And so I was excited to move to Chicago. So even though technically we were running away from this horrible situation, my eyes were on like, I'm going to Chicago to be a new person and to like, to live in the city and to have all these friends and to be popular. And, you know, like that was my, I wasn't focused on, the stuff that my mom had to focus on.
Right, right.
So I was a selfish child.
Well, you could just say you were a child. That's pretty much that's like,
yeah, we're all selfish.
You don't have to redundant. So when you ended up at the, so were you going into junior high? Is that like what grade were you going to?
Yeah, I was in seventh grade.
Okay. Which just is not
the best time.
Yeah, not necessarily great for anybody. And you came in hot. With some new duds,
right?
Bringing the capri back in a big way, even though they were probably regular pants, but
exactly
those 10, 11 inches turn them into capris. And then how long did you sort of give it like before you were like, oh, okay, this is not that.
Like I was not going to be, I mean, my rebrand didn't go as well as I thought, but I did, make friends immediately. And, you know, I was always on the adjacent, you know, I was always adjacent to every group. That's kind of where I fit in. And so I made friends like my first day in gym class. I remember sitting down in a line and the girl next to me was like, hi, I'm Joan. And I'm, you know, and then we stayed friends, like we're still friends. Aww. And so I had a That's couple great. Friends. Yeah. And I was new because it was 2 weeks into the school year. And so I was technically new. And so I was, you know, fresh meat.
Yeah, no kidding. But also, like, did you ever talk to Joan later on, like, as you guys got older, about this idea of, like, was, like, what was her motivation for saying hello to you? Was it, like, I know what it feels like to be new? Was it, like, I also don't, like, I don't have a ton of friends that I like here. This could be my opportunity, you know? Or was it just, she didn't even think about it. It was just like, hi.
Yeah, she was just, she's very nice and charitable.
Yeah.
And I think she saw someone that, you know, oh, you're new, like, let me accommodate you.
Yeah.
Which was very sweet.
Oh, God.
She's very mature.
It was very mature. It was very mature. Yeah, I didn't ever have to, like, I definitely obviously had new school experiences, but there were always a couple of people from the school that I had been to before, enough so that, you know, and or it was new for everyone because of that there was like, you know, a sense of like, okay, we're all going to junior high now. We all went to different elementary schools, so this is new for all of us. But so the main comparison I have for that is when we would go up to visit my grandparents on my mom's side, they went to church and I would have to go to church, and there's Sunday school for kids like by age group, and that's a very established like community. Everybody knows each other forever, and you know, to come in, I just remember that clammy, like sick to my stomach feeling of like, here we go again, because they moved several times, so it seemed like it was never the same kids, and just like coming into the room and being like, hi, yeah, I'm Esther's granddaughter, yeah, and then, you know, also like not really believing any of it, so then you know, sort of having that like imposter syndrome very much so, where you're like, also I don't want to be here at all, so that's not helping anybody because this is not for me, you know.
And it's hard to be the new kid. Is like a difficult thing to navigate no matter where you are, and I think that that's probably good for, you know, acting or stand up. You know, in stand up, you're just going up and you're
Ugh, good
playing to a bunch of
comparison.
strangers every night. And so I, you know, it's probably why I became a stand up. I was the new girl a lot, you know, before, you know, even before seventh grade. And there is, you know, you just have that glimmer of hope, like things might be different this time. You know, I might,
It's real, but yeah, that's but it's but also like that's I would rather be that person. Like I think, you know, when you're in the moment of being hurt, you're like, I'm gonna be cynical as fuck after this. Like I'm never gonna let this happen to me. But on balance, it feels so much better to be optimistic, you know? It feels like maybe this will be great. Maybe, you know.
And it was, you know, it was definitely better than the other times. Like the other
Well, that's
times
good.
I was, you know, we'd be in schools for maybe like 6 months at times, and it was just not enough time to put down the
Of
groundwork,
course, of
you know.
course. And was that just job, family, job stuff? Like, okay, gotta figure th or wasn't as it wasn't a structured chaos like being in the military, like being an army brat.
Yeah,
Got
it
it.
was like, yeah, it was like being an army brat, but your dad can't join the army because he's been in prison.
Got it, got it.
Classic American story.
Yes, it is.
So it was a lot of like, oh yeah, we need to move from this house because we haven't, you know, paid the rent or like whatever adult problems were going on at the time. And so school was always for me, it was just like, you know, getting in there, trying to get the right friends. And almost always I was adjacent, but I was like in the, I was always in the group, but I was at the bottom, you know, I was like a little bottom feeder.
How does that play out? Like, how is it expressed when you're at the bottom? Like, how is it expressed by the group?
It's you're the butt of a lot of jokes.
Ugh.
But luckily I was down for it. I was like, I'm in the group. Sure, use me as your punching
We
bag,
all
but I'm
have a role
here.
to play in society.
Exactly.
Oh,
I was like, as
no.
long as I'm here.
Yeah. God, I don't think I was ever in a group big enough to have a butt of the jokes. Like I think any friend groups that I was in were usually like two to three, like maybe four. I mean, I definitely had the experience of like, for some reason, one of them decided they were mad at me and like ma made everyone not talk to me and stuff like that. Like you got to be
Classic.
invisible for a few days, which is
Right.
awful.
It's awful even you saying that. I can feel it in my stomach.
Oh God. But
I
yeah, I
think
got yeah. No, go ahead.
those groups of like, you know, were you ever in Girl Scouts or anything like that? Because yeah, so I kind of joined everything, and so there was always a big group to be like, I was in the Girl Scouts, but even then it's like, you know, I'm not head Girl Scout or whatever, Queen Girl Scout. I'm
Yes,
just,
that's the appropriate. Thank you
no.
for using the appropriate term, Queen
Yeah.
Girl Scout. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not queen of the cookies. I'm just like sort of there.
Do you wait, and did you say you had siblings, or is it just you and your mom when you went up to?
No, there's actually five of us.
Oh boy. Oh
A
boy.
lot of kids.
Oh, your mom. That's
I
hard.
know. Yeah, she's a trooper. And yeah, five kids. When we moved to Chicago, my sister was two. She's the youngest. And so I mean, I have a 3-year-old, and I truly can't imagine going. It's hard for me to go to the grocery store with her alone. And then to be running away, traveling, getting to Chicago, trying to find a place to stay, all of that, like living with my grandparents. I truly can't even imagine a world.
Oh God. But you know, it's your reality. Kind of like what we were talking about before. Like there's when it's you and you're in it, it just doesn't have the same feel as when it's behind you or when it's somebody else's story, you know?
Oh yeah, you're just rolling with the punches. For my mom, it
Absolutely.
was just like wake up, you know, do your work, go to bed, you know.
Are did you get what when you finally got to high school, was that another move and a shift, or was that like no, like a lot of people from my junior high fed into that high school? Like, did you stay in one place at that point?
Yeah, luckily we did stay you know, I grew up in Oak Park, which is like right next to Chicago, and my sisters went to the Catholic school that was like in the town over. And then I was allowed to go to the public school, which is huge. It's like 3,200 students or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had all my friends from junior high. So we just like continued to be friends in high school, like added some people, merged groups. We had like a guys group that we merged, you know, in high school. So then there's this like big girls group, big guys group.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All I can picture is Greece right now.
It was like that, but with like a lot of pot. You know?
Perfect. And then what, like when you were in high school, did you find that you had interests or the interests that persisted from like earlier in your life? Were you an artsy kid? I mean, listen, I'm hearing you're in a pot smoking group. That could go any number of ways.
And again, I'm the person in the pot smoking group, not smoking the pot, really. Uh-huh. You know, trying it a couple times and going, I don't know if this is good for my personality. Uh-huh. I loved art. I was always painting. I was always drawing. But when I got to high school, you kind of had to choose whether you wanted to like go into visual arts or performing arts. Mm-hmm. And I played the trumpet, so I went to performing
enough
arts.
Said. Enough well, said. You play the trumpet.
I wanted
goodbye.
To be that.
Yeah.
That hot girl playing the trumpet. Last chair over here. And
is that like, that's not like marching band that you were in like seated orchestra-ish band, right?
I was concert band, but I also was in the marching band and I was a flag, like color guard for a while, like, okay. You know, with a flag and all that.
And please forgive me because I definitely was the furthest thing from any games or anything. Mm-hmm. What does that person do?
Yeah, so I feel like it's
again,
only
all
like...
All due respect.
All due respect, I didn't know what it was, so you're fine.
Great.
It's like there's a big flag like this, and you go da 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 da, and so you're just like it's like a huge flag, and then you're doing all these like twirly things, and then throwing it up in the air,
uh-huh.
And it's just like, yeah, I don't understand why.
It's like the glue that holds the entire production together is what
exactly.
I'm hearing.
That's why everybody knows about it, you know.
So it's funny being a flag girl, but it's like having a baton, but it's more complicated because the fly when you're there's a lot of flap and fabric that you kind of control.
It's probably easier than the baton because the baton is like I would imagine it's like hard to throw and catch that, you know, smaller, but
true.
But with the flag, it was just kind of we were dropping those flags during games. It was not pretty.
Okay, all right. Oh, really? You sort of have this cascade of visuals when you realize, like, God, what experiences have I had? I just don't remember ever seeing, like, a high school game of mine where that would be a thing. Mm. So I'm just picturing parade after parade with just a lot of batons. I've definitely seen flags in a parade. I'm good. I know.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that. I mean, like, it was the first year of marching band at my school because it just was like, I don't know. They were like trying to bring back the marching band. Uh-huh. And so I was like, you know, I was in it and I remember marching with my trumpet for a while. And then I didn't get along with the marching band instructor and they might've kicked me off the marching band. I remember getting into a yelling fight or something.
Oh, no.
And you know, the place to be the bad girls in the band.
I guess.
Yeah. And then, so I went to flags after that.
Got it. Okay.
Way more chill.
Got it. Also, why was the marching band gone? I didn't know that the marching band ever went away to where it would need to be brought back with gusto.
I don't know, especially with that many students. I don't know why they didn't have one to begin with, but
yeah,
we were not good.
Uh-huh. Well, may not have helped the cause. And what was your love life like in high school? What that looked like?
I had... a boyfriend for, I think we started dating either junior year or the beginning of senior year. So I was dating him. And then before that, oh my gosh, I feel like I don't remember my life before that as far as dating goes. There was a lot of like, you know, I pine for people. And so I was like, oh my God, there was this kid named Oliver who was, you know, always throwing these parties and didn't go to our school. I remember pining for him. And then we were like going We were dating, but then I saw him with another girl at Old Navy, and so that ended it. There was a lot of meeting guys and then feel and then getting broken up with. Like I met a guy at the mall, and he was probably like 5 years older than me, and he dumped me over a three-way call back
Who
in
was
the
on the
day.
call? Who was the third
His
person?
cousin. So his cousin called me
Ew.
and said, "Rick doesn't want to go out with you
What?
anymore."
What?
And then you could hear Rick on the phone, and I was like, "Are you on the phone too?" Just getting dumped left and right.
Weird. Like, I mean, on one level, it makes total sense because I feel like that easily could have happened to me. But when you really break it down, it's like, what's the logic there? Like, why? I sort of understand sending an emissary, but that would be so that you didn't have to experience any part of it. Not
It's
like, I want my
sneaky.
representative to speak on my behalf as I am standing here. They will do the talking for me is super weird. As a teenager, like on a three-way call, that's so crazy.
It was such a sneaky thing to do, but it was all the adrenaline, in the world.
I can't let this go. Why did he like, did he feel like he needed to confirm? Was he like, I'm suspicious that my cousin isn't going to do this, so I'm going to need to be on the call to verify so that Mo can't come up to me and say it never happened. Like
I think it's watching a crash reel on Instagram. Like you want to see the accident. And I think he just wanted to see the accident without having to be the one, to do
Yeah.
it.
He wanted to be able to rubberneck, but he didn't want to actually have to
Right.
pay for the damages.
Yeah.
I took that as far as it could go.
Yeah, we needed to.
Okay, so then you end up in kind of a longer term thing with this other dude.
Right.
What was the shape of that? Was it like one of those kind of high school marriages that was like, yep, we were together like every day, all
Yes.
day. We were very mature. We looked on all of the chaos happening with hormones and everything and everyone else's relationships that, and we're like, oh, someday you'll get to be like us. Was it like that?
It was, there was no real maturity in it, but it was long term. Like we both felt if we couldn't be together, I'd rather just die. Like we were so attached at the hip. We went to like, we did everything together. We ate after school. Like I would spend the night at his house. I would just spend the night in the basement,
Oh,
and
okay.
he had a car, so he would drive me everywhere, which looking back at all my male relationships, it's just guys giving me rides places. And yeah, we were together actually until we were together for over 4 years.
Okay, Jesus, yeah. That never ceases to amaze me. And I've talked to many people on the podcast who had those high school marriages, and I still am blown away by it. Just because I definitely felt like, being with someone, either I or the other person, after like a month would be like, look, I know we've been together a really long time. It's just starting to feel like too much. Like,
Right.
that
I
felt
think
like
I was.
such a long time.
We were holding on to each other for dear life
Well,
because we.
that makes, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And like his parents were going through a divorce right when we were together.
Yeah.
And so I think he was holding on to me. And then obviously my family life was out, out to lunch. And it was just like wild. And so we were
Yeah.
just holding on to each other.
Yeah. Are you still in touch with him?
I'm not really in touch, but I know what he's up to. He finally had friended me on Facebook maybe a year or two ago. And yeah, he's, living in the suburbs with a couple kids, that sort of deal,
Yes, he is. We have a surprise for
Yeah.
you, Mo. Please welcome.
Oh my gosh. Hi. He's like,
Here's the thing. I like to do that whenever possible. It would be amazing if, like, 10 years into my podcast, I pivoted and finally started like calling my own bluffs and
you
actually having
researched.
somebody coming in, like adding someone to the Zoom. Their little head just
Oh.
like, bloop, there they are. And then just sit, I could just sit back and keep
That'd
recording.
be That'd be the greatest and worst podcast ever. Just like a podcast where you just ambush someone with their high school ex.
Oh, it's interesting to imagine like how many people would say yes to that as the ex. You know what I mean? Like to be like, sure, I'll like totally startle someone that, you know, may or may not like want to have anything to do with me at this point.
It's like that's what all those talk shows were back then, you know, in the 90s. It'd be like, look behind this door. It's your ex-husband who you hate.
They really were. God, I couldn't even watch shows like that. Is that something you could watch passively and sort of be like, well, this is a shit show, but like not attached to with discomfort? Because I just couldn't. I mean, I'm not saying I'm better than anyone or in any way, because like there's plenty of stuff that, you know, I'm very drawn to that is like a hot mess. But that is definitely a place where I was like, everything about this feels very wrong.
I mean, I could watch the Oprah stuff,
Yeah, that's, I
you
mean, that's
know,
that
the
walks a line.
Lisas, the Jenny Jones, but I couldn't like Maury I did when I was a kid, but you know, then when you get into the entertainment industry, you realize like how much is fake with like Jerry Springer and Maury and like all these setups and people just like getting paid to say something that's not real. Yeah, so the magic was taken
I'm
away for
so
me,
sorry. I'm so
unfortunately.
sorry. Okay, we're gonna take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Hal Loveland.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
And we're the hosts of We Got This with Mark and Hal, the weekly show where we settle the debates that are most important to you.
That's right. What arguments are you and your friends having that you just can't settle?
Apples or oranges?
Marvel or DC?
Fork versus spoon?
Chocolate or vanilla?
Best bagel?
What's the best Disney song?
We Got This with Mark and Hal. Every week on Maximum Fun, we do the arguing so you don't have to.
Oh, all answers are final for all people for all time.
We got this!
Now, you said performing arts and then you left it at trumpet. So does that mean no like theater kind of any sort of like I'm presenting myself in a way that would slowly iterate towards stand-up comedy, you know?
No, I was honestly, I was into sports. I played basketball, track, cross country. I did a ton of sports throughout my high school career. And I didn't do any plays or, you know, actually, I went to high school with Cecily Strong
Oh, nice.
from SNL, and she was, you know, she was in the plays and she was always the funny one. And I thought, wow, I could never do that, you know. I just could, I can't believe she, it was like a magic trick that she could do something like that. And I have really, really bad stage fright, so there's just no way. But I tried almost everything.
So you did have that stage, but the stage fright was not present when you're playing the trumpet because it wasn't like you and your voice and only you and your voice.
Right. I remember walking out onto stage, even though there's 100 people on stage, and still feeling a lot of nerves. But you know, it you were in an ensemble, so it was you were hidden.
And when did you suddenly, I mean, that is always fascinating to me also, because I couldn't do stand up and I'm pretty good in front of people, but that's just, I couldn't ever, it feels like too big of a risk and too much work, as a
It's a
semi-lazy
shit show.
person. It's a shit show. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that the somebody with stage fright then becoming a successful, I can't say the words, successful stand-up comedian, that like what is that, when did you go like the first time you did it at all? I'm sure people ask you about it all the time if you are open about being, you know, having had stage fright, but like
Oh, yeah.
what does that loop look
It's,
like?
you know, I will try anything. I really will. I'll put myself out there even if it's really scary. And so I actually started as I took an improv class and then a couple weeks later started stand up. And it was the scariest. I mean, it's as scary as you think if you're not a performer. Like, oh my God, I could never do that. Like, of course you can do it. You know, it's really hard, but you just have to rip off the band-aid and say, listen, there have been thousands of bad stand-up comedians who have done this exact same thing, and you have to start somewhere. And no one starts at great, you
God.
know. But it was hard. It was like, I mean, in the moment, I was like sweating. I chugged a beer. I, you know, I had my jokes written out, but I was extremely nervous, and I was really nervous for probably 6 years. So, you know, but eventually it does wear off. And you just have to do it a lot.
Absolutely. Which is great advice about just about anything in terms of like what people's passions are. But was it a situation where people were kind of telling you, like, was there external and internal feedback coming that was like, ah, you're so funny. Like, why are you doing, like, you should do, like, comedy. You should do stand-up. Have you ever thought about doing stand-up? Oh. Did you get those? Or was it a very private process that you were going through where eventually you were like, no one will expect this, but I think I might go do a stand-up set?
Yes, it was so private. Uh-huh. No one ever told me to be a comedian. Nobody ever told me to be. I didn't really know any stand-up.
That, though.
I know, because you're just like living on this like dream that's just in your head.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when I started comedy, people didn't tell me to keep doing it. It took like a decade for people to just be like, yeah, you are where you're supposed to be. But
yeah,
no, it was a lot of, you know, trial and error, a lot of error. And I was privately saying, I think I can do this.
Yeah.
I was not a writer. I had to like learn how to write jokes, and you know, it was a whole process, but it was really exciting to do something like that from, you know, from the ground floor.
And was that something, you said you'll try anything, was that something that kind of would fall into a category of like, I was willing to try it once, and if I liked it, great, and if I didn't, that's fine too, that then became a thing where you're like, actually, you know what I mean? Like, or was it like, I'll try cow's brains. Like, sure, of course I will. And then from that point forward, it's not like that's all you could ever eat and think about, you know?
You know, I had no other prospects going on for career. I was so excited when I actually, the first time I did improv, I said, meaning in comedy, I'm going to do this forever. I love this so much.
Got it.
And then the first time I did stand up, it was like the same thing. I just thought, if I could do this, I wasn't even thinking about making a living, you know? And so it didn't even seem possible to make a living doing that. I just thought, oh, every week I have something to look forward to. I get to sit down and write these jokes and then try them out on stage. And so it was like, I was in my own little incubator.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's very impressive. It's very, very impressive. Because even just, again, I'm a full adult grown woman who has like done just fine in comedy, and still something happens when I think about doing that. I just feel, I think that imposter syndrome kicks in so hard where it's like, you've been lucky to spontaneously be funny or to be funny with someone else's words. But like the ultimate test is, can you take a string of things that you think might be like a shared experience or something that will surprise people and make them laugh. I sort of immediately fall outside of myself and feel like I'm having an existential crisis. Like, who's that like paper doll on stage? Like, what would that be like? And it's, I don't know. It feels, in times like this, it does feel like there's a gene that really does sort of like keep enforcing, like, no, keep going. You will keep going.
Right.
That I don't have.
It's almost easier like to do it when you have nothing going on and you're just like, well, I'll try this and this is my only prospect, you know? And then, but then there's also an advantage to people who start performing when they're not 21, and those people have life experience. So the jokes are immediately more interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess that's
because
true.
They can speak to that. But my wife is like, you know, she came up performing. She was, you know, child performer, sort of, you know, doing musical theater, like since forever, you know, she was like three.
Yeah.
So she is so funny and such a good performer and would be the worst stand up. And we talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
She's like, we will play games where she has to like come up with a joke, like right on the spot.
Uh-huh.
And it will be the worst thing you've ever heard. But I'm like, that's the funniest person. Yeah. I'm like, that's the funniest person I know. And she works in this, and she works in comedy.
Yeah.
And yet she could never do stand up because it just, yeah, it's just like, it's a different personality. Whereas like, I can't really be a comedic actor. you know, that's not like someone would have to write the part for me,
yeah,
or I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
So it's the same sort of like, I can't do that skill. I can just, you know, I can stand on stage and like, you know, shoot the shit.
That's amazing. when you did, you mentioned doing improv. Was that something that you did? Was that a like precursor to trying stand up? So that,
mm-hmm,
that's a, yeah, good, I, that seems good.
It's good if you want to like, okay, how do I start in comedy? Well, there's this class that they're offering. Great. You know, and it's a great place. You're like, okay, now I'm doing it. The
right.
First day you're there, I'm doing it. So I did that. And I did improv throughout, you know, the first maybe 6 or 7 years of my stand-up career. I just also did improv.
Nice.
And I'm not good, but, okay. You know, wasn't good, but, you know, I'm just like middle of the pack, hanging out, forgetting character names,
uh-huh,
where we are, asking a lot of questions.
Oh, sometimes those are my favorite shows. Was this at second, like, did you do Second City? Were you in the, I guess what that's the question I'm asking, is it, were you still in the Chicago area at this point? And was
right.
it through, like, some of the, you know, the more fabled improv troupes or schools?
Yeah, I did Second City and IO and The Annoyance. And, you know, I was always trying to get out of pain for the class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was kind of my super skill,
uh-huh,
that I had, because I had like no money and I would just keep forgetting, you know, keep forgetting to pay. So that's kind of what I was known for, was like having a bill that was due.
I love that you called it a skill, which made, yeah, me feel like there was going to be a lot of nuance to it and there were going to be some real twists and turns. But it turns out the skill is like feeling okay about not turning the money over when you're supposed,
right,
to.
Just being like, well, this is impossible for me to pay this.
Which,
so
by the
I
way, is
leaving
a skill in the sense that I would be like, oh, that's like not necessarily even, I probably shouldn't admit this, but not necessarily, it wouldn't have necessarily even been that I thought it was patently wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could say that, but I also like shoplifted when I was a teenager. So I, you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I wish I could give myself that credit, but it seems like the reason that would keep me from doing it would just be, I would care about my reputation. Like, I think I had a real, mm-hmm, fear of people talking about me behind my back. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
So like, it would have been like a, you know, I'm not going to give them any fodder to like, cause I, you know, when you're like solipsistic, self-centered teenager, you were already sort of feeling like maybe people are talking about you behind your back and making fun of you and stuff. So when it's like,
have you
the
ever
chances that the conversations are about you are pretty slim, but
have you ever walked in on anybody talking about you or text chain or
absolutely
catching somebody?
Absolutely.
It's so awkward.
Oh my God. It's awful on all sides. Like, I feel like I've been in all versions of that and it sucks.
It really does. I think the most awkward part is trying to accommodate people when they're talking about you and then you're just trying to like smile and change the subject, even though you're the victim. It's
yeah,
that's so awkward.
Yeah. You, just to go back to relationship stuff for a second, because you talked about pining for people. Did that, at that point, were you pining for both and or all genders, or were you, was it identifying itself that way to you yet? Was it more nebulous?
No, I didn't know until I kind of started comedy slash was in like, you know, my fifth year of college, you know, that I even liked girls. I was just like so busy.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I like, I just was not exploring that part of myself. And I had a college boyfriend too. So at that time in high school, no, I thought I would marry that guy. And I thought that I was straight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought that sex isn't important and it's okay if I don't enjoy, you know, any sort of intimacy with guys. Like,
yeah,
that's just how life is.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. And until I was like with women, then I was like, oh yeah, you fucking idiot. It's been like right here in front of you. Like,
so
obviously.
And no one ever like flirted with you or sort of gave you vibes that you were like, why would you think I would be into that?
No, there was, you know, I was very, like, people just assumed I was straight, and I get it. I was wearing Abercrombie when I could get my hands on it, and, mm-hmm, you know, I didn't, and I had boyfriends, And so I didn't know they didn't know, but in seventh grade, I did have a dream about kissing my seventh grade science teacher. And I remember the next day in class being really sweaty and just thinking like, oh my God, does she know that I had that dream? You know,
dreams are so, powerful that way.
Right. And there were a couple of moments, you know, I look back on and go, oh yeah, I didn't really clock that, you know, but yeah, I didn't know until like my 20s.
And then what prompted? Now I'm just doing your podcast. Now I have taken over, and I am now doing your coming out podcast. So
yeah,
I'm not sure how that happened.
Great. It's great because
there's
an
overlap.
I interview people about coming out, and you're interviewing me about coming out. So I you know, there was like this girl who was working at Rock Bottom Brewery in Colorado, and someone said, oh, she has a crush on you. And I was like, what? That's so random. Are you kidding me? And she didn't look like a lesbian. Like, I didn't assume she was a lesbian. And so I was like, oh, that's so interesting. And that just sparked this like curiosity within myself. Like, oh, wait, I do like that she likes me, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the first time. Then I didn't really start doing anything until I moved to Chicago again, because I was living in Denver at that point. And then I moved to Chicago, and I want to say I was like 24. And I knew what was up, and I was like, I want to try, you know, to like kiss girls. Uh-huh. And so I met
we'll
this.
We'll start with that. We'll just start there.
Yeah. And I met this clown I was running an open mic, and she was like, can I do some mime work? And I was like, yeah, it's your funeral.
Amazing.
And then she started flirting with me, and she was clearly a lesbian and had dated this other lesbian who was a stand-up. And so I was like, interesting. And so she would like come and hang out sometimes, and we would flirt. And then eventually we went on a date, and then I went to New York to do some comedy. And that's when I went to the Cubby Hole, and I was like, you know what? I just need to kiss a girl at this bar. And then when I get back to Chicago, I'll be like a pro. And so I go to New York and I make out with a girl at the Cubby Hole bar. And we made out for a couple of days. And so when I came back, I was like, okay, now I'm making out with this clown.
Okay. Well, did you have that moment where, and I say this as a person who like kissed girls from, you know, I was real horny when I was little. So it was like three. I mean, I definitely feel like I have, you know, some intense like crib related memories. But so I sort of always felt the physical difference. But then like there was a time in which I hadn't kissed a girl for a long time. And I really sort of had that like the moment of how much your own physicality is related to a person that you're kissing or like making out with or whatever. And like the sort of dynamic of kissing a guy and like the stubble and like their face is probably usually bigger than yours and like the way they move. And then kind of being at a place where I think I was like self-aware in maybe a destructive way, but really being aware of like, oh, I have the bigger face. Oh, their chin is tiny and soft. Like right. Just a real sort of like deconstruction of it in a way that was not, it was totally unexpected because it should have been something that I was like, oh yeah, this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that? Like, I've never gone into this with anyone, by the way, before,
yeah.
But it's very specific.
It is really interesting because I always think about how when I was dating guys, they had to be tall. Like they were 6'4", 6'5". They were athletes, right? And like that's what I was never dating guys that didn't look like that. And then with, you know, when I came out, I'm the tall one. And so all of a sudden, height, I never cared about height. It's like I can't even imagine caring about height now. And I go, wow, that's so interesting that that's so like a hetero thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because really, I never have thought about it. I never thought about how, you know, tall or short any of my partners have been.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that is interesting. I think that there is like a pheromone thing, obviously. And so for me with like kissing guys, it just was never like, you know, first kisses, no matter who it is, can be like really exhilarating,
right.
But there's some, like, to me, guys always didn't have, like, there was no me pouncing on them,
right.
Really.
Right.
And like with, it just felt like there was something like this is not what I mean, but it's almost like they all had bad breath.
I totally understand.
I
totally understand. And in fact, I think most people can understand regardless of who they're attracted to, because at some point or other, most of us have like found ourselves in a situation where something, you're in a position where you're like, I thought this is what I wanted, or, you know, for whatever reason, you're like, oh, this is, or like working on a show mm-hmm. and having to kiss somebody that you wouldn't choose to kiss in real life, no matter how much you might like them. It is so,
right.
It's so strange, because it is like this, there should be a different word for it. Like, it shouldn't be also called kissing, because it just is, the whole experience is completely foreign.
It is. And I'm not sober, but I dated someone who was sober. And the amount of time that it took for us to actually kiss was so much longer, because you don't have that like liquid courage uh-huh. of like, let's just make out, you know?
Yeah.
And then that can be awkward, because the first time you'd be like, wow, we are really like living in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, we are experiencing this.
Every clack of our teeth, every.
Yes.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Most game shows quiz contestants about topics they don't even care about.
But for more than 100 episodes, the Go Fact Yourself podcast has asked celebrity guests trivia about topics they choose for themselves.
And introduced them to some of their personal heroes along the way.
Oh my gosh.
Shut up.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to cry.
Oh my stars.
It's so, so exciting.
Join me, J. Keith Van Stratton.
And me, Helen Hong, along with guests like DJ Jazzy Jeff, Yardley Smith, Roxanne Gay, and so many more on the trivia game show podcast, Go Fact Yourself.
Twice a month, every month on Maximum Fun.
I got to get into this MASH game with you.
Okay, great.
I'm very excited to see what your answers will be, and yet I still don't know what all of the categories are going to be. So let's see what comes up for us. Let's start with three instruments that may or may not be a part of a band or an orchestra in high school. Three instruments that you would love to be able to play beautifully on.
Oh, okay. Guitar, piano. Let's just throw in the French horn.
Great. Curveball.
Okay. Curveball French horn.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay. Three places in the world that you would love to have another home, if we could sort of teleport you there. You don't have to worry about the travel.
Yeah. I mean, Barcelona, Montana, and Paris.
Great. Three foods that in this reality that we live in now are either like ecologically irresponsible, or you just wish you could still eat a bag of something and not feel sick afterwards. We're just going to remove all the negative ramifications. You can have these three things whenever you want, for as much or as little as you want, at the snap of your fingers. Three foods. Can be real specific or can be like broad categories like pizza.
Okay. John and Vinny's pasta.
Right.
Magpie's ice cream pie, and this is so dorky, but I really do love an Impossible Burger.
Great. Not dorky. That happened so fast. Side note.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden it tasted like meat, but that feels like it happened in the blink of an eye.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I don't like red meat because I don't, it just doesn't agree with my body. Yeah. And so I do like, obviously I like the taste, but I just don't like what it does.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Next one. Let's do three. We're going to give you some romance or sexy times in this alternate universe that we're building for you. Three people that you would like to have a long or short term relationship, fling with, whatever. It can be anybody, any period, any era, any age.
Oh, interesting. Amelia Earhart.
Great.
Ryan Gosling.
Great.
And I'm trying to think of, I guess, oh no, I can't do anyone I've met because that would be weird. Well, I'll just say I've never met Kristen Stewart, so we can put her on there.
Perfect. Cut to tomorrow. Mo.
I'm like, don't listen to this one podcast, okay?
She's my number one listener. I'm so, so, so sorry.
We can okay.
We can take it out in post.
Please do.
Okay, let's do three people from some period in time. Let's remove ourselves from 2022, but three people that you would love to collaborate on something with. And you don't even necessarily have to know what the collaboration is. Just it could be a painter or a composer or another comedian or a director. Three artistic types that you're like, ooh, it'd be so fun to work on something with them, whether you can think what that is right now or not.
Yeah. I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Great. So genius. See, oh my gosh. And they can be of any time period?
Yeah.
Okay. Susan Sontag.
Great.
/ Annie Leibovitz.
Mm-hmm,
And who's smart? Oh, man. I kind of want to hang out with LeBron James. So he's got a company. So we'll collaborate with him.
Great. Great, great. And agreed. Okay. Next one, let's do three movies that you can jump into and just be in that space, in that realm. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character. It's just like, oh, this gives me access to this world that I love in this movie.
Oh, okay. Uncle Buck.
Oh, my God. I love that movie so much.
My favorite movie.
I love it so much.
I know. I almost wanted to say like every John Hughes movie.
I understand for sure, like, people can, you know, I'm sure people write their dissertations on like what's problematic about John Hughes movies. I totally get that. I really thought Uncle Buck was safe. And then someone was like, no, he's super creepy that he's like stalkery about her romance and her love life. And I'm like, okay, but like that feels like a reach. Like,
yeah, that guy was bad though.
But like he was a bad guy and Buck could tell. He just could tell. So yeah. I don't feel like it crossed over. I mean, it's also comedy, but like, some things,
Buck,
you know,
was bad.
Yeah, very bad.
I mean, he was cheating on her, as we recall from the big party. I can see what's good and bad about those movies, and I still want to be in Uncle Buck. That house rocked, and I want to live there.
Yeah. And Macaulay Culkin. I mean, better than Home Alone. If you want to see some
like,
preternaturally quick. Like, very funny, adorable Macaulay Culkin. It's there for you.
It's amazing. How many questions have you asked consecutive 37? He's just every so good. Okay, let's see. I mean, I haven't really seen this show, but Emily in Paris.
Okay.
Is, I mean, that's not a movie.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine.
It's in Paris. So that's exciting. Uh-huh. And then Legends of the Fall, because it's just so beautiful.
Yes, indeed. I get that super mixed up with A River Runs Through It.
Exactly.
Didn't they, like, come out right around the same time? And like, there's that.
And they're
mountain-y,
Montana feel.
Yeah. Like a story of three men. Like, it feels like they're, maybe that's not even true. Maybe I'm only thinking of one movie and I've assigned those qualities to both movies, but really I've only ever thought about Legends of the Fall. I don't know.
Right. No, they are confusing. And I also feel like I did this wrong because I was like, where were they? Montana? Okay, I'll be in there. So I basically was picking a spot.
It's okay. I mean, listen, you started with Uncle Buck. That's the only one. That's the one we're hoping you get.
Fingers crossed.
Next one, let's do three. Let's do three time periods that you would like to visit just to see. It doesn't have to, it may not be fun, but you're in a safety bubble. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. But like, are there specific historical events or just eras that you're like, oh man, like it's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that that was really happening in one way or another. And I would like to see it with my own eyes for whatever reason.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd like to see, the 70s. The 70s. I want to say like almost turn of the century, like late 1800s. Mm-hmm. I want to see if I can just go in there and be like, hey, who's secretly a lesbian, you know, and then like get out of there.
Zing, zing.
Yeah. It's hard, you know, and then, I mean, I'm not even going to go way far back. Like I'm not going BC. I'm going to go like 1934 and I'm going to try to watch my grandma be born. And be like, you're going to give me your clothes one day, lady.
Terrific. And then last one, let's do three people from today or yesteryear that you would love to have on Come Out, Come Out, that you would love to get the opportunity to talk about their experience of coming out. Any age?
Ellen.
Era. Great.
Let's see. It's hard with gays because a lot of them weren't out, you know, so it's kind of modern.
Even if it was like, yeah, I'll say this, and because that's such a great point, almost like coming out to themselves. Like you could still talk to somebody who was suspected or known as closeted or whatever, but they may still have that moment where they're like, I need to admit this to myself, or that they never did.
Yeah, George Michael. And I mean Cary Grant, because I heard the rumors.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Okay. Give me a word that sort of can contribute to a description of like how you felt when you woke up this morning. What's a word that you could use?
Tired.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna do I hesitate to call it math. It doesn't even deserve that title. But I'm going to do this calculation. And if you could tell people where they can find you, what they should be checking out. In other words, vamp. And I will quickly
vamp.
Run through this.
Okay,
and
I'm
going to
vamp.
Your results.
Okay. This is my filibuster.
Take it away,
and it's all. Okay. Okay. Well, you could see me. Let's see. You could see me in Chicago, if you're in Chicago, October 8th at 7 and 9 p.m. at the Lincoln Lodge. I'm recording my very first comedy album. Yeah, I really waited on that. Didn't want to record an album because I was afraid that I would hate all the jokes a year later. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing the jokes long enough that I feel comfortable putting it out there. And then I'm filming my special in Los Angeles at the Lodge Room, which is in Highland
Park.
We'll
only do Lodge shows.
Only
Lodge
related.
Yeah.
And that's at 7:30 on October 24th. And I honestly would love anyone to come out to that show because I filmed a documentary about seeing my dad for the first time in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And this is the corresponding stand-up that goes with that documentary. So it's something that I really care about.
Yeah.
And I would love for people who laugh with their voice to come out.
Their sparkling, shining eyes.
Yeah.
Don't laugh with your eyes at a comedy show. You don't need to.
I need the audible.
Wonderful. Please bring those laughs. Please bring those audible laughs. I do have your MASH results. I have to say it's very eclectic. I'm feeling real good about it.
Okay.
Like, for example, you know, listen, do you get to jump into Uncle Buck whenever you want? No, you didn't get Uncle Buck. I am shattered by that, as I know you are too. However, you did get Emily in Paris. And we've established that it's not so much that you want to be on the show, but that you want to be in Paris. So it would have been kind of a bummer if you doubled up and also got in Paris over in the You Have a Second Home. So the good news on that is you can go to Paris whenever you want in Emily in Paris, but you also have a beautiful house in Montana.
Oh my gosh, it's so, I must start looking at property right now.
Exactly. And by the way, if you've gotten Legends of the Fall and Montana, it would have been like, oh, okay. Like, huh, kind of got the same wish there. So yeah, got some nice variety. Like, huh. Well,
yeah, like Mo didn't understand the assignment. So I'm glad that worked out.
It worked out great. I'm very pleased about the Montana residence. I feel like there's going to be a lot of wide open space. Presumably, Amelia Earhart will have a couple of planes that she loves to take up and zip around the beautiful
wow.
Montana skyline. Presumably, you'll be going up there with her. There's
a
great romance. One of history's great romances happening between you and Amelia in this world. I can only assume you wrote many piano sonatas about her because you are a very, very skilled, nay, virtuosa, I don't know, but you definitely are a genius at piano.
True.
So good job on that. Listen, whether that plays into your collaboration with LeBron, I have no idea. I can't wait to see what you guys get up to. Cannot wait to see what you get up to. At some point, when you're talking about making your plans, you're going to be sitting down to unlimited John and Vinny's pasta.
Beautiful.
Just going to have that. It doesn't matter if you're in Paris, Montana, here, anywhere. Pasta.
So good.
Whenever you want. You also get to, I don't know, jump into the 1970s, see what that groovy era was all about. Get that all over you, but also in your safety bubble. And this feels, I'm saving this for last because it doesn't seem like an impossibility. It feels like there's every possibility that this could happen. But you will have Ellen on your podcast to talk about her experience of coming out.
Wow, I'm very excited because you know there's a lot going around, and I'd love to dig in.
Yep,
you know?
Yep. Yes, indeed. So, and you know what? I would love to talk to Portia about her experience too, because I bet it was super different.
I'll
go ahead and have her on, and then we can
great.
Swap stories. Yeah,
this would be great.
This would be great.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
It was so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for having me on. What a great midday snack.
That's exactly what I'm after. I want it to feel like a midday snack.
Yeah.
That really is like a huge compliment to me. I love a midday snack. So, all right, everybody else, I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Remember when we could save kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.